There is a lesson in every moment, even in the things we take for granted. Each lesson in kindness may change our course. A lesson may be unexpected or come from misunderstanding. Sometimes the shift of growth is subtle, but as we move forward, we evolve or continue to change with each and every lesson. As we go through life, we receive many gifts along the way from others, collecting things from each person we meet. Sometimes the gift is small, and sometimes a gift that envelops you. We may receive the gift of strength, courage, or bravery, love, grace, or knowledge. Whatever the gift may be, there is beauty in it. There is power in it too. At the end of our lives, what we've learned and where we've been is comprised of all these elements. Sometimes never realizing the things we've picked up along the way, the impact we've made, or the way these things have stayed with us for our lifetime and carried over with what we've left behind.
This is the Tea and Midwifery, a Call the Midwife podcast. Share a spot of tea with us as we chat all things Call the Midwife.
Hi, I'm Rachel.
And I'm Erin. Welcome.
We're so glad to have you here again. Third episode. Exciting stuff.
I know. I was going to say that I'm a little under the weather today, just so that we can say, help, call Dr. Turner. But I'm feeling better. But yeah.
We need him on speed dial.
I know. Well, hopefully he'll be a guest at some point in the future of
our podcast. That would be amazing. That would be a dream.
That's my dream.
A dream guest. All of them, honestly. Like, I would love to have any one of them.
Past or present.
Yep. Even people who are extras, just to get, like, an inside scoop on how they film and the process and how it was to be on set.
Well, I've been trying to get on Call the Midwife TikTok. Which isn't really a thing yet, but
we'll make it a thing.
We'll make it a thing. It does have there are some people that like are Call the Midwife fans on TikTok, and there's one girl that was background and she posted something, and then there was another girl who was she was like a supporting cast a guest star. And she has a TikTok too that I stumbled upon the other day. So I'm like, you know, well, maybe that's not too far out of reach.
That would be amazing.
I think anything's possible with social media. Yeah. You know.
Yeah. You just got to reach out.
Maybe.
Yeah.
But.
So I guess we should talk about the warm drinks we are drinking.
I know. Well, I need to up my tea game because you're always have some sort of magical tea. We used to have like this cool magical Disney like tea that was like all these teas in like a circle that my brother got my mom one year, and they were really like magical teas. And I branched out and had tried something different than the normal like two things that I tried, you know, that I like. And realized, oh, I like that. Oh, I like that too. But I'm drinking coffee again today.
Is it flavored coffee? Does it taste like blueberries or anything else?
No.
Oh, it's just normal coffee.
Straight up plain coffee.
Okay.
I'm bored. I'm so boring. I'm sorry. Tell me about your magical tea.
Okay, so today I am drinking. I have it right here. It is called, it's by a company called Tea Motions. Teas for emotional well-being. And this one is called Passion Fruit Jasmine Green Tea. Ooh. Yeah, it's really good.
Is it hot? Well, you said warm drink, so I was gonna say, is it hot? But you said warm drink, so yeah. I'm
well,
assuming.
It's not hot right now. We had a pretty long conversation before we started recording, so it's definitely not hot anymore. But this is to bolster inner strength and self confidence. So, which I need. This is my inner Trixie that. Getting my inner Trixie up.
They should market like
they should.
Call the
they should have
tees.
Call the midwife teas. I wouldn't be surprised. They might have some.
That would be a good idea.
Should we do it? Should we make our own call the midwife teas?
Maybe we should. They could be a little circular magical teas, and you could try different flavors, just like the Disney ones.
Now we have to figure out what flavors everyone should be.
Well, weren't we talking about, like, sometime figuring out if we, like, their zodiac signs?
Yeah. Now we have to figure out their tea flavor.
We can put it together.
Yeah.
It could be like a, yeah. I love it. Anyways, we're talking about season one today.
Moments, right? Moments in season one.
Yes. But I do have a retraction from our last episode. There was two things. I was trying to figure out, like, how to describe Cynthia, and maybe there's three things. And pure of heart, I think, was what I was looking for as, like, words go to describe her. Mm-hmm. And also I said that there was a scene where she was kind of a buffer, and I thought it took place in the old Donatus house. It actually didn't. It was after that. Okay. So, and I don't even know if it was at Nanata's house that it actually took place. Sometimes I think, like, I see the show, I don't really see the show in a linear way anymore, because I will go back and just watch different things. Cause mm-hmm. I was like, oh, did I miss that? Or somebody will be talking about something and I'll go back and, you know, so I apologize for,
Yeah, I've been watching them back to back now, so now I don't even know when one season begins and when another one ends. Like, it's all, like, one big, you know, thing to me. I don't know what season, what happened, like, you know, what happens in the seasons.
I know. Well, both of us, we're trying to rewatch this season one to kind of, figure out some things and remember what happens, even though I watched the whole show more recently, like, as a binge.
Mm-hmm.
Also, when we were talking about last episode being, like, somebody specific from the show, and then we were talking about characters being combinations, I realized that I definitely have a lot of Chummy in me. I'm very futsy,
I'll be
so
too.
I would say, like, Sheila mixed with Chummy, mixed with maybe sprinkle some Cynthia and Jane in there, and possibly, like,
some Barbara. Maybe I'd like to sprinkle some Barbara onto me too, just because she's also clumsy.
Yeah. She's like a chummy Jenny Lee kind of.
I was gonna say that, because I feel like she was sort of like a replacement in a way for Jenny Lee, but
yet she had a lot of Chummy in her too, so it was like, really, she was a good balance. I loved Barbara so much.
She's definitely one of my favorite. I say that about all of them. She's my favorite character, but
no, I know, me too. They're all my favorite character.
It's hard.
But I guess, we're not just one thing. We're all not just one thing. And that's kind of like what I was, like, thinking about it, you know. But anyways, just a bunch of different people, and hope to be like Monica Joan as an older woman.
Me
anyways.
Too.
So what should we talk about first?
Should we start with, since birthing is the main thing about the show, should we talk about the first birth?
I also think that the show, the way the show started, was really interesting, because it was almost unlike, I don't know if it was unlike any other show, but when she first got there, and the music and the build up, and, like, she's walking, and everything it's so interesting to see a pilot episode set everything up.
Yeah. And we're seeing it. We're seeing it through her eyes because this is all new to us. And it's all new to Jenny, too. She didn't know how people lived in the London East End.
And I think that's important, too, the when we talk about, like, the different births, mm-hmm. like, the first birth of the
Yeah, episode. A lot of it was shocking to her. And Sister Evangelina was like, we're not in a hospital, you know. We're not in one of your nursing clinics. This is real life. This is, you know, this is how people live. This is how we deal with it. Because she was, like, shocked about the newspaper on the bed.
Yeah. She was shocked about a lot of
everything.
Things.
Everything.
Well, the first birth, which we both thought was the 24 children, was actually... well, she did check on her, but the first birth was the...
The soot.
Yeah.
The soot baby.
The most interesting thing about that, actually, for me, was that the woman that was giving birth actually reassuring Jenny Lee.
Yeah. She knew. Like, Jenny Lee was very nervous, and you could tell, because, you know, she hasn't dealt with this before. She was used to being in very sterile, clean environments, and this is totally new.
Well, you know, rewatching, I'm going to jump, but there is an episode further into the season where she meets the young woman who's pregnant, who's running from her life.
Oh, Mary.
And she ends up helping her. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then she steals the baby.
Yeah.
And she says to her, you know, you're too young to be a midwife. And she says, well, I'm older than you. And then later in the episode, she says, I love your innocence, Nurse Jenny yeah. Lee. Which one of us is the oldest now? And I thought that really depicts where she was at in the first season. She had all this experience, but she had an innocence and a naivete about her when it, because this was a completely different world yeah. than she was used to. There was also an interesting scene in the antenatal clinic with a character named Pearl. And she had a disease. And it was kind of one of those things where it was like a wake-up call.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. This you're talking about the... Was it syphilis?
Mm-hmm.
That she had? Yeah. Yeah, I think that whole first episode is like Jenny Lee running into things that she was not expecting. Like, she wasn't expecting to be living at a nun convent. and she wasn't expecting these people. Like, she walked in on a fist fight.
Yeah, and I think, though, too, the episode kind of proves, though, that a little kindness goes a long mm-hmm. way. Because at the end she went and saw Pearl and told her that she thought she was a heroine.
Yes.
And, like, the women of Poplar were all heroines.
Yeah, because of that conversation she had with Trixie, because Trixie was talking about it, how she felt like she deserved all these medals in the beginning, how she felt that she deserved recognition and all these things. But then she's like, no, I was wrong. It's the mothers who are the heroines. They're the brave ones. And Jenny sort of learned from that moment and seeing. And learning about these women and meeting them and talking with them. She realized, she's like, Trixie's right. Like, these are the heroines.
There was a point, too, where Sister Julienne was actually a little sharp with Jenny Lee, which you don't really see, and they're at the dinner table and she's talking about conditions
mm-hmm.
And you know, she also, when she meets her in the kitchen at the antenatal clinic with about Pearl, she says, you know, does she not, you know, care or something along those lines, and Sister Julienne said, you know, she doesn't care, and she hasn't been cared for, something yeah. along those lines. And when Jenny Lee goes and kind of like basically tells her she thinks she's a heroine, the look on her face is kind of like shows what just being kind to somebody right. going through something. Because she ended up losing the baby
right.
as well. And you can tell that she doesn't have the best living conditions mm-hmm. and she's already got children.
And she's not very liked in the community. So being shown kindness was probably huge for her.
Yes, I concur. But what about the second birth?
Okay.
I don't know if it's the second birth, but the birth that we...
It is.
Sticks out for us.
Now, I'm pretty sure it is. This was the one I thought was the first birth, because I forgot, because the first birth was so short. Like, it just happened.
Yeah, it was really quick.
So...
And then there was the soot, and then the baby was covered, and the baby was okay.
Yeah. And then everything was well. But yeah, I liked the second birth a lot, because... there was some trauma in there. Like, not everything is squeaky clean. Not every birth comes out, has a good outcome, you know, because Jenny thought it was the baby passed away. And I'm wondering, because you see later in the series that, you know, when a baby's presumed dead, they still try to, like, rub its back. They still try to revive the baby. But Jenny just didn't do anything. I'm wondering if it's because she's out of nerves or a lack of experience or what, that she didn't try to revive the baby. Like, she just assumed it was dead.
I think earlier in the episode they said it was a believed stillbirth. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's why. Because Trixie said that she would go with her. But Sister Julianne said that she had something else to do, mm-hmm. that it was going to be, like, one of those nights. So she needed Trixie's hands on deck just in case they got more calls. So they sent Jenny Lee by herself. And then Dr. Turner, that's where we meet Dr. Turner for the first time. He's mentioned earlier, but then we meet him for the first time.
He just pops in like he does.
And he explains things, what he was doing. Did you ever notice that he likes to explain everything?
Which is great.
I know. I love it.
It's very reassuring, though. I did. Oh, was it this episode? Oh no, it was an episode with Chummy. It was probably the next episode. He like explained things too much with the woman who had braces on her legs, and he was just talking about all the difficulties she's had throughout her life, and she's just like laying there listening to all this, and she starts crying because.
But there's a beautiful moment after that with Dr. Turner and Chummy where he reassures her mm-hmm. because. You know, there. When she first comes, Sister Evangelina asks her, "Well, do you have a tendency to break things?" And you know, she is klutzy, and she kind of says no. And you know, it's kind of like, well. And then that's the scene where she like, does she fall?
Oh
back?
Yeah, she falls she backwards, falls back. And like the screen falls down, the tray falls down.
But then Dr. Turner and she are in the kitchen, and. He says that you made her feel safe, which is important.
Yeah, because she reassured her and talked to her gently and quietly, which she needed after Dr. Turner was like, all these things are wrong with this person.
No,
but he was just like explaining all these things like that happened in her life that were tragic.
Oh,
and, like...
yeah. No, I thought you meant he thought something was wrong with.
I'm talking about the woman who just started crying, because doctors tend to do that, though, when they talk about patients. Does. But I think he got better after that. Like he got more. I don't know.
He still does explain stuff that he still always, like, talks about.
But he's kinder about it, I think. Like, he has more compassion about it.
Well, yeah, I think that it's because he's always teaching somebody something. That
yeah, and he was trying explaining. To teach Chummy. Yeah, he was explaining mm-hmm. the situation to Chummy, but...
And
too
he's
much.
A good teacher.
Oh, yeah.
I know. He's a good teacher and a compassionate doctor. I'm just trying to stick up for Dr.
Oh,
Turner.
I know. I love him. Oh, no. I love Dr. Turner. I love Dr. Turner.
Help. Call Dr. Turner. I actually found the direct quote about Pearl Winston. It's Pearl Winston isn't accustomed to caring or indeed being cared about. And Sister Julianne talked about conquering her revulsion when mm-hmm. she first started. Yeah. And Jenny Lee said something along the lines of, "I'm sorry, I didn't know people lived like this." And Sister Julianne said, "But they do, and that's why we're here." Which is basically kind of sets up the whole season, mm-hmm. or they call it a series in the UK. Yeah. But I thought that was very interesting because she fought against that many more times throughout, you know, because she wasn't used to that. Mm-hmm. And anytime we're not used to something, we can be very uncomfortable.
Yeah.
But she kept going. She kept going back. She kept trying, and she did honestly cared about her patients.
Yeah.
I thought what was interesting that I didn't really notice the first time around watching this series was the interactions of the nuns with the midwives, and with the patients, but with the midwives, it was as if, you know, you talk ministry mm-hmm. in like a religious life. I feel like each of them had a different ministry. Like maybe midwifery was a ministry, but their ministry or how they ministered was informed by their life experiences. So Sister Evangelina growing up poor,
yeah.
and so she was like tough love, and Sister Julianne was more gentle and more like, this is perspective,
yeah.
you know? And I just thought that that was really interesting. And Sister Monica Joan and Sister Bernadette, like Sister Bernadette was kind of more nurturing mm-hmm. and kind of tried to, you know, help guide in almost like a teacherly
yeah.
manner. And there's a scene where she is teaching. It's Trixie, Jenny, and Chummy.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have Sister Monica Joan, who's just insightful. And she's got life experience that you don't expect necessarily sometimes that what she says makes any sense, mm-hmm. but it always does. There's, you know what I mean? Which I love. But I don't know if what I just said made sense.
It does. It does.
But I think that our life experiences do inform, like, what we do, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Or how we react to something.
Yeah. I think Jenny Lee came to the table a few times where she was just, like, revolted about something that she's seen. And everyone at the table is just like, yeah, that's normal.
We're used to it.
Yeah.
Speaking of tables, back to the 24 children, they all ate at the table with no plates.
Oh, right. I think I would have been uncomfortable with Jenny Lee in that moment because, you know, like they're all eating from the same pot with like their hands and everything.
Oh, yeah.
Are you talking about that moment or? Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah, because, well, I was just thinking, like, if it was, like, present day and there was 24 kids, they'd probably have a reality show. And
that would be, like, yeah.
That would be a party sub or something.
Right?
There would just be a party sub on the table. Or one of those things where they make, like, they put, like, the foil down and then they put a bunch of stuff and, like, everybody has a seat. You know, that's what that
Oh, you know what? What do they call it? A crab bake or whatever, where they like cook everything in like the same pot with like potatoes and the crab and the shrimp and whatever, and they just dump it out on the table, and then we just like have our own seats and we just like grab what we want.
Go to town.
Yeah,
yeah.
That's so it's kind of like that.
Yeah, that's the present day equivalent.
Yeah.
People with, you know, now that we're where we are in 2020 and where we've been in the past 2 years or so, people would probably be a little bit more, you know.
Yeah, I would just be, I was just
leery of hygiene.
Yeah, I was hygienic concerned about, but like, are these kids, did they wash their hands before, you know, eating this food. You know, I would be with Jenny with being concerned about hygiene, and I'd probably just take like a little spoonful of like what Jenny did. There is a part in the book where she said that she denied tea because she had tea once from a client, and then she got like bad diarrhea or something along those lines. Like, she did not have a good reaction to it, so she was always hesitant about eating or drinking food from clients or patients.
Well, that happened in the scene with Joe Collett, where he gives her kind of like a dirty mug, and then he's got the bugs,
yeah. And that's when she goes and she's like, oh, I just had the most horrifying experience, and everyone's just like, yeah. And then Chummy goes off talking about like huge bugs in India, which did not help.
I know. Well, you know who else has a little bit of Chummy and Barbara in them, which is segueing, is Sister Frances. I noticed she's always saying something and you're like, oh no. Maybe not. She's so cute.
Yeah.
That's not season one. I'm sorry.
It's segue. Okay.
The second birth.
The main birth of the show.
You know that those birthing scenes, they said, take between like 5 and 7 hours. It's like amazing and interesting to see too, like you were saying, the different times of gloves and masks and the way that they were even positioned mm-hmm. to give birth was all different.
It changed throughout the series.
And when you're talking about how they tried to revive the babies in different seasons, mm-hmm. that's something maybe we should Google or look up or research.
Yeah.
Ask.
Well, I'll have another episode on all that.
But they nursed that baby back to health, which what they said is usually the baby would go to a hospital in an incubator, mm-hmm. but the mother refused to allow the baby out of the hospital.
Well, I think, like, mm-hmm. this is her, what, 25th, I think?
I don't know if it was the 24th or 25th baby,
but it was up there. I think, like, she knows. You know, she knows how to take care of babies. She knows how to nurture them and bring them back to health. So I think, like, she knows how to do it. So it's mm-hmm. not surprising that she was like, no, I'm the hospital. I'm the baby's hospital. I'll take care of them. Because she knows. And she was having her, she was doing her special technique with that tool, with feeding the baby.
And their story was really interesting, too, because, you know, she started having babies quite young. Like, that Jenny said.
Oh, how old was she? Like, 14, 15? Like, teenager.
They said that she was, Sister Bernadette said she was 14, but somebody else at the table said that they thought she could have been even younger. Mm-hmm. And just the fact that the both of them, they didn't even speak the same language.
Yeah.
It's just fascinating.
Yeah, I thought the whole story was really interesting. I liked that for the first episode, because it really, like, introduces you to that place in that time period and how people lived. Like, it introduced you to a lot of things.
Well, even her walk through Poplar during the opening, mm-hmm. seeing the remnants of the Blitz, you know, which was years before.
Yeah, like, they didn't,
you know.
Yeah. And especially, like, the first Noctis house was, like, like, it was all rubble, just, like, around, mm-hmm. you know, the convent. So it was, but they don't explain it. Like, I didn't know what that was when I first watched the show, because I didn't think about the Blitz, because I'm in America. Like, I didn't think about it, you know?
Well, I know You know, honestly, I thought about the Blitz only because I wrote a play that took place in between these time periods. It actually takes place in 1958, and one of the characters was British, mm-hmm. and she was affected by the Blitz.
Okay.
And that's the only reason why I kind of even knew. And there was a few movies as a child that were about the Blitz mm-hmm. that I remembered that I had watched. But it didn't really register.
Yeah, I didn't make the
until
connection.
Until I started doing, like, you know, more research on the show, yeah. though, too. Like, as well. But you think about, wow, how something can be affected so many years later mm-hmm. like that. But, you know, Poplar was one of the most impoverished communities in London.
Yeah.
And it was hit one of the hardest hit, apparently, by the Blitz as well.
Yeah, I have a quote from Jennifer. Most people in London at the time didn't know the East End. They pushed it aside. There was no law, no lighting, bedbugs and fleas. It was a hidden place, not written about at all. So it was just kind of like, I think of the Lion King moment where Mufasa is like, all the parts where the light is touching is London, and then, like, Simba asks what's that shadowy place, and he's like, oh, that's the London East End. I feel like that's kind of what it was like from how it's talked about.
It's really interesting.
Because it was forgotten about, it was not talked about, it was, like she says, it was pushed aside, it was not a place where people sought out in London. It was like the slums of London, you know?
Well, there is a scene further in where the Lacys, they have the shop, and Cynthia's tending to Mr. Lacy, and their boy's coming home, and he's marrying an American,
mm-hmm.
and she's completely appalled by them and the way they live and all that stuff. And
yeah,
you know, and he's like, well, this is where I'm from.
Yeah.
You know, and it's kind of like, it's interesting to hear, I think too, that the series is giving a space and a voice to a place that you're saying, like, was kind of not talked about for a long time.
And like I said, and I think,
I just was going to say, I think that people appreciate that. And I think that it sounds like, you know, the production gets letters from people who had, you know, family members and that lived.
Yeah. I was going to say, from, like, a previous episode, I mentioned I have, like, the letters to a midwife, letters to Jenny Lee, and just, there's a lot of people that wrote her thanking her for writing about the London East End and that time period and that place, and it meant a lot to a lot of people.
It sounds like, too, that they all pulled together, to help each other.
Mm-hmm.
From what I'm reading, and they didn't have much, but what they had, they gave.
Yeah,
it sounds like, which is such a beautiful thing, because you have all these people in the world who have so much and they don't give anything, and then you right. have people barely have anything giving everything they have to help somebody else.
I remember, you know, this isn't season one, but that reminds me of the time when Dr. Turner was sick, and you know, their Turner's living room was filled with whatever anyone could give. And he was like, these people are poor. They can't afford this. And I think
Timothy.
Or was it Timothy? What did they say?
He was like, they wanted to do it. And Sheila, I don't know. It was because he was a good doctor.
Yeah.
It was, you know, and Sheila came in the house and Timothy was holding down the fort, and there was more stuff at the doorstep, and he said, it's mm-hmm. been coming all day, and she walks into the house, and it's like, and then when he turns around in his pajamas, like, the next day, and sees all of this stuff, and We could find the direct quote for the next episode. But yeah, I think it's Timothy says they did it because they want to, or because they care, or because you're a good doctor, something like that. And, but that's exactly like, you know, and the other episode where it's a Christmas special where Iris has the baby, and that's out in a couple of seasons, where, the Buckles kind of like rig the contest so she gets all the formula and everything.
That was a sweet, that was such a good episode.
But you know, but she was like trying to do the right thing, you know, to help somebody in need.
Yeah.
You know, I know rigging the contest was probably like not the right thing to do, but you know,
I think it's something I would have done myself, just because she really, really, she actually really, really needed all that stuff.
And to be the person that she gave away the baby's cradle to the event, which was very difficult for her. And they didn't have a lot, you know, and she was helping with costumes and doing all this stuff. And, you know, it was just nice to see that someone that was trying to do right by other people are trying to do right by her too. It just shows that, like, you know, a little kindness goes a long way, and you don't have to have a lot to show kindness to somebody.
I love the community of Poplar that they show in the show. Everyone just...
Like when they're bicycling. Yeah. When they're bicycling through town, and you see, like, people doing different things.
Yeah.
And the laundry hanging from across
and the... Everyone knows everyone. I love that. I love that. And, like, everyone says hello to each other, and... Everyone knows everyone, which is not always the best thing, because everyone's in everyone's business. But I know it's still a community, and I kind of long for something like that. Like, I live in like a condo complex, and I don't know. I wish like we did like community, like a block party. Like, no, do people do block parties anymore? Like.
Maybe you need to start it with the... Then you can have a table. The table. that's your goal.
Yeah, I would love to do that. Like, my parents put on block parties all the time when they lived in Bridgeport, Connecticut. Like, they would shut down the road, and, like, all the neighbors would come out, and it would just be a big, like, event. And they... Mm-hmm. I don't know how accurate it is when the show does it, but it just seems like I love all the events that the show puts on.
Yes, me too. Three-legged races. And
yeah.
They have some stuff like that here. And they had block parties here. And more when I was a little kid, I remember, like, they shut down my neighborhood once, because I've lived near a bunch of churches, and they shut down the neighborhood, and they had like a race around the neighborhood, and then they had like a big fair, and like everybody came, and it was just like, yeah, it's really interesting, the sense of community. And they have the Cubs, and they have little shows they put on, and people seem to go to different events, and then the heart of the community, we were saying, is Nanata's house.
Yeah. At least everything seems to, like, center around there, because it's the show. But,
there's also the birth of, the Breach birth in the show that I think we were kind of talking about, where, Sister Evangeline is giving Trummy a really hard time being late.
I would be so... I love Sister Evangelina, but I would be so scared to, like, work for her.
Yeah, she's scary. I know.
She's a tough love. Like, she loves you, and she cares about you. She just wants you to do your best. But she does it in a scary way.
The weird thing is, the fact that she was Trunchbull and Matilda doesn't register with me. When I watch the show, though, you know, it's two separate characters. Even though they're both tough, Like, Trunchbull was scary in a different way.
Evangelina's
heart is in the right place, and you know that.
Yeah.
And her... Her past experiences of life inform the way that she is.
Yes.
I think. She grew up poor, and, you know... I think she connects with the residents of Poplar on a level of, I've been there. Whereas a lot of the midwives were middle class, you know, from middle class families. Mm. So they never saw those kinds of conditions.
Yeah.
Because there's an episode towards the end of the first series where she talks about, have you ever seen a workhouse? Because there's that couple, you know, that grew up in the workhouse, and they're talking about them.
She cleans Nanada's house. The woman. Yes. I forgot her name.
I had it written down. I can't think of it on the top of my head, but segueing back to Chummy, sorry. She gives her a hard, Sister Evangelina gives her a hard time about being late for appointments, and they're trying to stick up for her, and they're learning about a breach birth, Sister Bernadette's teaching them, and they're like, well, she wrote that down in the log herself. She talked about earlier on, you know, so Chummy can't ride the bike.
Right.
So she's trying to walk. She said, I'll just take a Shanks pony or something like that. And I'm like, and then she says something about riding a horse. She can ride a horse, so she could probably ride a bike. So I'm like, where is she going to acquire a pony? A Shanks pony actually means your own legs, which I didn't
know. Okay, I didn't know that. I didn't know that. I was wondering. I'm like, who's Shankin? Like, and then where is this pony? I haven't seen him.
She actually refers to being able to ride a horse in like the same.
Yeah, it's like it's like the next sentence. I'm like, okay.
So I'm like, where is she going to acquire a horse in Poplar? Have you seen? I don't think I've seen a horse in Poplar. Have you?
Not that, I mean, I'm sure there was a horse at some point.
I'm sure there was.
Didn't Trixie dress, oh no, that was a cow, right? For a Christmas play. They dressed up as like a horse or a cow or a donkey or something.
There was a mule or a donkey or something, I think, at one point.
There's that horse.
There are animals, but I mean, that might be interesting. You know.
Oh, now I'm going to, like, keep my eyes out for horses in the show.
Me too. Me too.
But,
write in if you've seen a horse on Call the Midwife.
Yeah, okay. Thanks there for clearing that up, because I was, like, I just, like, took it as, like, okay, Shanks' pony. Sure. Like, she must have met some, like, she must have met some guy who had a pony that she could ride.
Well, that's what I thought. I was like, oh, she's kind of more wealthy. And
yeah, right.
She had the pony, like, you know, it came on a boat or something. I don't know. Or there's some farm down the way in the countryside. I don't know. But the reason I figured it out is because somebody else said it in the series later on. Right. And I said, she definitely doesn't have a pony. She's definitely not getting a pony. So I Googled it.
Okay, good. Because I was just like, okay.
But I don't know. Did we ask the question before, too? Was everyone able to ride a bike? You know, do you think anybody had to learn to ride a bike?
For the show, like, or like as a character?
For the show, like, I don't know. Not as a character, like in real life. Well, so I know I digress, but the breech birth that Chummy participates in, like, she gets called for a breech birth. And goes, and, you know, then Sister Evangelina comes and Dr. Turner comes, and she's like, when it's breech, you always call the doctor.
Yeah.
They had that class with Sister Bernadette, and she had asked some questions, and it was made known that she had fainted during her nurse's training, you know, and so it was quite a beautiful thing to watch her reassure the expectant mother, and to deliver this baby and to see all of the things that Sister Bernadette had basically explained come into play, and that, you know, she was a fully capable midwife.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, sometimes things happen that have us questioning our capabilities. And I think that then with that, you know, Jack Smith, it was Jack Smith's mother, and Jack Smith was part of the show from about season one to three or four. And it was Timothy's friend. He was one of her cubs, and she buys him a bike in one of the episodes. And he's one of the kids heckling her when she can't ride a bike earlier on. And then he becomes kind of her confidant. Yeah. But you see this friendship between them kind of blossom, because she does count on him in cubs. And he's holding the baby during the Christmas special where he and Timothy both get polio.
Yeah. Oh, that's right. He gets polio as well.
And well, he probably got polio from Timothy, I think, because they were sharing a drink, you know. And so, or I don't know. That's what, or Timothy got it from him. I'm not sure. But I think Timothy was presenting symptoms earlier.
Because they caught polio in the other kid sooner, and he was better off than Timothy was.
Yeah. But it's just really interesting to see, though, like, kind of going back and watching the show and realizing all these little connections and how the show... You'll even see some of the same... You're talking about background extras. There are certain... background extras that are in a few episodes where you'll see familiar faces. And so they've created a community, essentially. I don't know how often they might use the same people, but I think that there is a sense of community when they have bigger scenes too, and it seems like everybody is on board, including the crew. There's details with everything. They're all about the details. Like Sister Julianne, well, Jenny Agutter said she opened a Christmas card, which wasn't a real Christmas card. She wasn't reading the Christmas card. She wasn't, you know, she was just opening it as part of the scene. But someone had taken the time to actually write in it to Sister Julianne. Which I thought, how cool is that?
That's really cool.
It creates a world, and it feels real. And I think it feels real because of all of that. And it was a real world at one point.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. But,
yeah, I don't question, I don't question anything that happens in the show that we see, like the authenticity of it, because... You get so absorbed in it while watching the show.
Yeah, I'm completely lost in it. Like, I feel like that's an appeal for me.
Yeah.
Like, to be, like, completely lost.
Yeah, I think that's one of the things that has grabbed me from the beginning is how authentic it feels. And I never knew about this area in time, this moment in time, this history that happened over there. So it was just like I was learning a lot while watching the show, and it just drew me in because it just felt like it was of that time, and it felt real to me. So
I was also thinking about how they thought that the show might not catch speed.
Yeah, they were talking about that.
And how... The thing about it, I think, is it's its own genre. It's its own entity. There's nothing... And we've probably said this before, but, like, nothing really comparable to it. And I think... is it comparable or comparable? Whatever the right word is. But is it the same... Is that the same word? It's the same spelling. You know what I mean. But I feel the thing that I found so fascinating rewatching the first season again was that it was set up in two ways. They tie stuff up in a bow. So when you watch the whole season, you realize the theme of the first season had to do a lot with love.
Mm-hmm.
It starts about talking about what, like, finding love, what love could do. It ends on that note, yes, as well, with Chummy's wedding, with Jenny Lee, like, writing a letter, kind of writing a letter to say goodbye to a piece of love, mm-hmm, from her past.
Yeah.
To maybe welcome in more love as she stands on the pier and throws rose petals. But they had it such that it could have stood on its own one season. But I'm so glad that it didn't just stand, yes, on its own one
and
season.
I'm glad that it's not ending and it's going to be around.
Better and better and better. Yeah. Yeah.
For a while.
But the thing is, I wonder if Heidi Thomas looked at it from the point of view of, I'm developing this as if it can go on, even though it might not.
Yeah.
Because you look at the development of all of the characters, even little Jack, and he had this relationship with Chummy, which led to more story in other seasons.
Mm-hmm.
Friendship with Timothy, you know, Max, who play, I don't remember his last name. Tell me what his last name is. Max, who plays Timothy. We're going to just call him Max like we're friends. Hey, Max. He gave Laura Maine and Stephen McGann like going away cards in like the second season, because he thought that was it for Timothy Turner too.
Mm.
So even after the second season, they weren't exactly sure the future of the show, and now it's completely different.
Yeah,
story.
It's been renewed at least till 2024, I believe, which is awesome.
But you wonder where they thought it could go, because the characters had, even if they didn't have a huge role, they had something that could carry them forward, which I loved.
Mm-hmm.
Every single character, even smaller characters, you know.
Yeah.
And we're going to talk about Joe Collett a little bit. We touched on him.
Oh, right. Yes. Yeah. Getting back to season one.
I know we're having too much fun.
I know, just
randomly
chatting.
Talking. Yeah. I just thought that when we were talking about, like, experiences that inform other experiences, how when you have someone who's a little bit older, you know, sometimes we forget about their story. Mm-hmm. And I think this show shows that, like, someone's story always matters. And I think that Jenny Lee's experience with Joe Collett informed her experience in season two with Mrs. Jenkins.
Oh, yes.
Because she found this sense of empathy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she learned a lot.
With her.
Yeah. She grew a lot in season one with dealing and being friends with Joe and dealing with his illness, and then ultimately having to say goodbye to him. It was, his story was very heartbreaking. But yeah, I think Jenny learned a lot from that experience.
And I think that Sister Julianne being very, is pointed the right word with her about, you will go back. Like, you will go back.
Yeah.
Even if you don't want to.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that made it a difference, because when she let her walls go come down, mm-hmm, and she really got to know this man,
yeah,
she had genuine love for this man,
right,
and understood that the conditions he was living in were really out of his control.
Mm-hmm.
And then you ask, when he was put into the hospital, was he actually better off being cared for in this dilapidated building?
You know? I think he was, because his dressings weren't even being changed. What was it? Was it a nursing home, or was it that he was put into?
It was some type of hospital.
Okay.
Yeah.
But they weren't taking care of him. And I think that's,
no,
you know, that's why he
got sick.
And then
he lost
sick.
His legs.
Yeah. He lost his legs, and then he got even more sick And then he passed away because he wasn't being cared for like he should have been.
My friend always talks about before her grandfather passed away, she interviewed him and asked him a bunch of questions. Mm-hmm. Ironically, she and I met on a Neal Street Productions movie millions of years ago. So I don't know if that's ironic or full circle or what, but we've kept in contact since. And she always reminds me to ask questions to the older people in my life while you still can.
Yeah,
because I think that, yeah, the stories. And I even have been, since watching Call the Midwife, asking birthing stories. Mm-hmm. You know, my aunt was born in Scotland, and I asked, were you born by a midwife? Then I found out that I actually was born by a midwife. Did I tell you this?
You told me. I don't know if you told our listeners.
The viewers? Yeah. Well, I don't know if I've said this before, but I might keep repeating myself. But I was born by a midwife, which I didn't know until I started watching Call the Midwife. And so that was really interesting. I was in a hospital, though. And, you know, it's just interesting to hear the different times. And it got my grandmother talking again about her nursing career, which I think she really loves reminiscing mm-hmm. about. And I think, you know, they say to tell people, they tell us to live in the present. But sometimes the past has gifts that we need to explore. Yeah. And it's not so bad. It's not like living in the past, but memories are beautiful and heartbreaking
yeah.
and helpful. You know, sometimes things that you've been through help somebody else. And I think that that's what happens with this show.
Yeah.
Sister Evangelina's experiences living the way she lived helped her connect to Mrs. Mm-hmm. Jenkins, which helped Jenny Lee connect to Mrs. Jenkins, and helped Jenny Lee say, oh, wait, well, I'm going to connect to her, though, on a different level.
Yeah.
And I'm going to do this thing for her. And she went and found the records.
Right.
Of the,
yeah, she worked so hard doing that. I loved that moment where she mm-hmm. just was looking in book after book, how much time that must have taken out of her day just to help this woman get some closure.
Those records are really interesting because my grandmother did genealogy mm-hmm. for a long time before there was, like, all the ancestry.coms yeah. and things. And so we would go to libraries all over and go through books like that.
That's awesome.
And it was really interesting to see that would have been the only way to find that. You don't have
yeah.
the access to the internet. And like you say, the time that somebody put in, there was such care in the time
mm-hmm.
that she gave that.
Yeah.
It's like above and beyond.
Yeah, I love that.
Let's talk about love. Let's talk about Shummy and Officer Notes.
Yeah.
You tell me a little bit about that.
So what I love about their first meeting is that it wasn't like they crashed into each other, which is so cute.
She crashed into him, right?
Right. Oh yeah. Oh, not they didn't like walk into each other. She ran him over with a bike, as Chummy does. But what I like about that is that, well, while watching it, you wouldn't think that it was kind of uneventful. You know, like it wasn't like music wasn't flaring up and they didn't have like little heart eyes at each other. It was just like a moment, and you know, you wouldn't have guessed that they would have had a relationship after that. You know what I mean? Like form a relationship after that moment.
I don't know. Now, because you know when
yeah,
you rewatch
yes,
it.
Yeah, but like I'm like no, trying to go no. back. But I just love how, like, you know, it
well,
wasn't the
back.
Main part of the show. You know, it was just, like, a
no.
moment that happened, and then they moved on from it. But then, of course, go on.
I think when she kind of looked up at him, I think they had, like, a little bit of, like, a moment. And then, you know, she got him the whiskey, and then...
Yeah.
So I think that, like, rewatching it, you can see things. But did I notice it the first time? I don't know.
But you definitely notice when they talk again, because I think Chummy and Sister Evangelina are on their way to meet a patient, and
yes.
they start talking, and how are you? I'm good. How are you? You know, they're just like repeating the same questions to each other just to like keep on talking. And then Sister Evangelina is just behind them, like just rolling her eyes and like, you know, clearing her throat because like, come on, like we gotta go. You guys are being ridiculous.
Well, I think she said that she was glad that she took vows.
Right?
And she was actually, like, their matchmaker, though.
She was, though. Like, she got it going.
Well, we meet Fred Buckle in the first season, too, and we really learn about a lot of his schemes.
Yeah.
And I think that there was the reason he showed up at Nanotta's house was to warn Fred that the authorities were coming to like shut down one of the things
right.
he was doing, like toffee apples
right.
and like
oh,
have,
oh
like,
and
some
something
type
about,
of bird
yeah like what was
the bird
what was the bird, it's like on the tip of my tongue, pheasants, was it pheasants or something along those lines, like
yeah, something like that. And that was when Jimmy was sitting in the storeroom. He was staying in the boiler room. And there's all these... There's always so many things going on at once
right.
with the show, too. So, but then, you know, Officer Noakes comes in. And they're, again, exchanging pleasantries
right.
awkwardly.
Yeah, I love
and
it.
Sister Evangelina's like, would you like to take her to the pictures? And... You know, would you like to go? And then the rest is history.
Right.
And
I wish I remembered the things that she said, because like she has said some pretty hilarious things regarding both of them, and I can't think of anything.
Sister Evangelina.
Yeah.
Well, she's funny too. Even when Chummy was having the baby in seasons. Beyond mm-hmm. while Officer Noakes is like waiting in like the parlor or whatever, and she said something hilarious to him too. I don't remember what it was. It's a baby, not a penguin or something like along those lines. But that is really, their relationship is sweet, and they really just are really good, well suited
yeah.
for each other. But there's a lot of matchmaking going on, I think, on that show.
Yeah.
We'll talk about that in a future episode, I think.
Yeah. Maybe around Valentine's Day, we can talk about
yes.
relationships.
Love. More love stories.
Yeah.
The interesting thing, too, is that when they go on a date, there is the girls are all like sitting around a table, and Sister Bernadette's with them, mm-hmm. and she's kind of like giving advice about like it becoming like a romantic relationship and everything, and you kind of get the idea that maybe that she doesn't really know
mm-hmm.
about it personally, like from her own experience, but that's really interesting too, when
yeah.
she, and then you learn like that she may not want to be a nun anymore.
Yeah,
you know, right there. That's one of the storylines that I thought was really interesting too, because that set that up really, really well. Where, and there was a little bit of like foreshadowing with Cynthia by some of the little things Cynthia said and did in that scene as well. And then the scene when Officer Noakes comes to the door,
mm-hmm.
Sister Bernadette goes and gets them and says, you know, there's a gentleman at the door. And she kind of, Cynthia is like the last person she looks at before they walk out. And then she stops and she looks at the room where they are. And then they're, you know, at the dance, and Sister Bernadette takes off her wimple
mm-hmm.
and her glasses, and she looks at herself in the mirror.
And she lets her hair down.
She lets her hair down. And we see how, like, beautiful and young she
mm-hmm.
is, you know? And it's like, does she have, like, a fear of missing out, you know?
Yeah.
It's like she's in purgatory between two worlds. Like, she's got this world as this religious life and then a world she could have.
Yeah.
And she's not really sure, like, where she should go with it. Which I thought was really interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like how we get little glimpses of her story and her struggle that we're going to see later. When did she start talking to Sister Julianne about it? Was it season two?
I think it was season two because they got married season three, okay. Christmas special. And it ended with Chummy, that season ended with Chummy leaving. And the foggy road.
Mm-hmm.
And Timothy was in season two. That was when we met Timothy Turner.
Yeah.
And he wrote those letters thinking that Timothy Turner might not return. And now he's at university and all grown up and everything. So that's so interesting. I think I've looked back a lot on Sister Bernadette too. Like you say, when did I first start noticing different things about what was going on with her journey? And mm-hmm. Stephen McGann actually said in an interview he thinks that she has had the biggest journey of all. But I do think, like, if maybe Cynthia stayed longer, some of them could have had bigger journeys. Yeah. Because Cynthia had quite an interesting storyline as well.
Yeah.
And then it kind of just abruptly ended. But it is really interesting to think, like, you know, she's sitting there eavesdropping and they're like, Sister Bernadette, you know, what are you doing? And then
and then
she's like, says to the girls, oh, I hope you have a wonderful time, when they're going out with Chummy. And you feel almost as if she's like,
she wants to go, she wants to be with them, to go dancing.
I thought it was almost like, you know, when maybe you were like young and like your friends are all going to the prom but you don't have a date so you don't go to the prom. And then you're like, but you help them get ready or something. Mm-hmm. And then they all go to the prom and you're like, oh, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know if that's a good comparison, but for some reason that's what like came to mind because.
Yeah, she's sort of on the outside looking in and she wants to be.
Yeah.
Part of that world, but, you know, is unsure about it. Like, it's a scary decision.
It's that sense of longing, you know, that sense of longing that you feel. She feels.
Yeah, but she felt conflicted and bad about those feelings.
And then you hear the song In the Mirror for the first time, too, which is a song that they play a lot when Sheila looks in the mirror, mm-hmm. or Sister Bernadette looks in the mirror. And her glasses. So there is a whole scene, apparently, with the glasses change in season two that they cut out.
Okay.
So I don't know if there's more stuff in season one that they cut out with her, but they seem to, like, to whoever is actually editing for the U.S., you're doing a marvelous job, but please stop cutting out any of the Turner's storylines, which all the fans call Turnadette, because we recently found Turnadette Tumblr, right? But yeah, there's a lot of things apparently that they're cutting out, and there was a whole thing with her glasses, which I think are important because, you know, but you see how she's like asking about like, does she want to wear her glasses, for the wedding? And she says, well, I want to see the groom. And then she's looking in the mirror often,
mm-hmm.
which became like, we know it's not part of season one. Like, there's a progression of Sheila and Sister Bernadette looking in the mirror, but it begged the question for us whether or not Sister Bernadette was near or farsighted, or she, aka Sheila, was near or farsighted.
Yeah.
Like, so that's our question. We want to ask everybody, like, what you guys think about that. What do you think?
I think she is nearsighted. I'm nearsighted. I think she's nearsighted because she can take off her glasses and look at herself in the mirror. She can see up close.
So is that far sight?
Am I getting confused?
Yeah.
Looking it up.
I think she's farsighted. And farsighted means you could see up close, and nearsighted means you could see.
Oh, so it's opposite. Okay. I get confused.
Yeah.
I get opposites mixed up.
Well, we'll just say that we think she can see close
up.
Okay,
nearsighted.
She can't see far away.
Unable Nearsighted is unable to see things clearly unless they are relatively close to your eyes.
Oh, it's near.
So yeah. Okay, so I was right. Because I'm nearsighted because I can see things close up.
Why did I think it was the opposite? I'm confused. I think she can, whatever close up means.
Nearsighted.
Okay, I think she can see things close up but not far away.
Yeah.
Because I think, like, she's always looking in the mirror, but when she, like, when she's kind of farther away from the mirror, like in the sanitarium in her worldly clothes, mm-hmm. or when she tries on the wedding dress, she has her glasses on.
Yeah. I mean, I need
I'm going to forever get far and nearsighted confused.
I need to wear my glasses no matter what. I think I only take them off when I'm in bed and I'm looking at my phone and my phone's like so close to my face because that's where I can see it clearly. But even being nearsighted, I can't read like a book without my glasses on. My eyes are awful though. I don't know, like, you know, how bad are her eyes? You know what? Like, it doesn't look like she's wearing Coke bottles or anything. You know, the lenses don't look very thick, so her eyesight might not be that bad.
But the glasses are so part of who she is, which is really interesting. They say that she's, like, very protective of the glasses in, like, real life, too. But she said, I can't do any of my scenes if I don't have the glasses, you know? Mm-hmm. I have always had 20/20 vision, but always wore glasses because I had problems with my eyes. Mm-hmm. And now my eyes are a little worse, but I have like astigmatism. But they say that they think there's something wrong with my functional vision, which is like an advanced thing. So it's interesting to think even just about glasses in that time period.
Yeah.
Eyesight and what was.
Like, I'm curious about how different getting your eyes checked even was back at that point. And we see...
Well, that's something we should look
at. Yeah, and then Sister Monica Joan, in a much later season, she had to have, like, some eye surgery done. She had cataracts, and then she had to wear her, like, those, like, crazy glasses. Where, like... Mm-hmm. Both two different lenses, and
she wears glasses in the first season too. I noticed when she's making, she's cutting out like doves or something.
Oh. And yeah, they kind of got rid of that. I wonder if they got rid of that so she could later on have that storyline with her cataracts, because she stopped wearing them and she started using the magnifying glass.
Mm-hmm. Maybe she could just see better with it because it was, like, bigger. Mm-hmm. Everything was bigger.
Yeah. Or maybe her eyes got so bad that those other glasses were just useless at that point.
Also, back to the Turners. I really like their storyline because I feel like I'm living vicariously through their love story. So that's why I need every single detail.
Well, I'm buying the Blu-rays. Which should not be cut.
I think they might be. I don't know.
They shouldn't be cut. They should be 100% completely there. I'll let you know.
Oh, also, I watched a video about the birthing process the other day. Jen Kirby, who played Valerie in later episodes, mm-hmm. basically said, like, everybody involved is, like, the midwife's holding the umbilical cord piece. Terry Coates feeds the baby underneath somebody's, like, leg.
Yeah.
And then the mother releases something. So it's, like,
a whole process. Like, everyone's involved.
Like, yeah. I was, like, wow, that's so cool. That was just to think, like... how, like, it's, like, just such a team effort. But it's, like, a lot of pressure, you think, to, like, make sure you get it right. Because they're filming for so many hours, you want to
do it. Like, if you release the water, I guess, at the wrong time, the birthing fluids, like...
Yeah.
Everything's all wet then, and you would have to, like, start over or get dry sheets or
back to one.
Yeah. Another 7 hours.
Well, they said that there's certain things that they only have two of, and there's two takes, like, when they're, like, maybe doing a cesarean or whatever, yeah. when they're using something where they're cutting, they only have, like, two, so you have to get it right. And did you hear Dr. Turner is actually a lefty, and most of the instruments are right hand,
oh.
so somebody else sometimes does
stuff. Oh, really? Okay.
That's Isn't interesting. That interesting?
Yeah. That's cool.
I was like, oh, fun facts. But I wanted to, I had a quote from Heidi Thomas that at an award show, mm-hmm. which I thought was really interesting, because the show was all about, like, genuinely talking about seeing what love could do. And basically, you know, the show really was about, like, love.
Yeah.
And Cynthia said something, too, about bravery. Being in love and how love took bravery mm-hmm. because you didn't know if your heart could be broken.
Yeah.
And then in the end, they talked about, like, grace and learning about grace and what that meant. And Heidi Thomas said she accepted an award and she said, "Let's all be nice to each other in this industry because when you feel safe, you can be brave. And when you can be brave, you can achieve anything." And I think that also goes so well with the theme of the show mm. because the people of Poplar had to be brave. They had no other yeah. choice. And the midwives in these harrowing experiences and circumstances had to be brave. And love does take courage. And Sister Bernadette leaving the order, that was brave. Mm-hmm. There's just so much about feel, and they talk a lot about feeling safe. And that's one of the things we talked about Iris earlier. She said when she realized last minute, oh my gosh, she's going to have a baby, and she didn't know she was pregnant.
Yeah.
And she said she didn't feel safe. Sister Julianne told her she always had to feel safe. And they called Sister Julianne in.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I just thought that that was really interesting, and how it just seems like the show connects to so many things.
Yeah.
If that makes any sense at all.
There's definitely, like, underlying themes that are always there in the show that yeah. are really important to the show, like compassion and kindness and bravery.
Empathy.
Mm-hmm. Making sure people are taken care of. And of course, love is the biggest theme of the show.
Love is the most important thing. And
yeah.
I think the interesting thing about there's letters, love letters, you know, you hear about people from years ago saving love mm-hmm. letters, you know, had all the letters that he ever wrote
yeah.
me. We don't really do that anymore. You know,
no, even it's all like, I'm so upset because I wish, because, you know, technology and computers they've changed all now that now, like, everything's digital and everything is quicker and people talk in, like, shorter, you know, sentences, and you can communicate with people just so much easier. There is, like, an art form almost to writing a letter
in
to
cursive.
Somebody. Oh my gosh, cursive.
Which they don't teach
No, they
anymore.
Don't. but I just miss the act of letter writing.
Well, maybe we need to start, because I have to tell you that I didn't handwrite it. I did type it, but I did send someone a letter once. I put it in a card.
Mm-hmm.
So I did write a note in the card and I sent a letter. A boy I loved. And, he passed away. And when I went to the same year, actually, that they filmed the first season of Called the Midwife. Oh. And It's an interesting connection. I don't know if that means anything. But it was the same year.
Yeah. I used to write a lot of letters when I first, when I graduated high school and I moved away. I wrote all my friends letters.
Mm-hmm. And I'm sure they love that because I remember him receiving the letter. And it was years before that that I had sent it before he passed away. Mm-hmm. And he called me and said, that was a really nice letter, you know. And I was really glad that you wrote to me. And we lived really close, mm-hmm. you know.
Yeah, that doesn't matter, you know.
But at his funeral or his wake, his mother hands me this card that's envelopeless. And I'm like, what is this? Mm-hmm. And I open it up and it was the card that I had sent him those years before. And she said that he had saved it and it was amongst his most prized possessions.
Oh, I love that. That's so sweet.
And the quote on the front was like, what lies before us and what lies after us are tiny matters compared to what lies within us, by Ralph Waldo Emerson. And I don't know if that's the correct quote, but I just thought, you know, wow. And I think that we should write more letters to people. So. Because it's personal on a different level mm-hmm. than sending an email or...
Yeah.
Whatever.
I feel like you
And you never know.
Yeah, I feel like you put yourself more into a letter, a written letter, than an email or some other digital form of writing to somebody
else.
It feels
more vulnerable, almost. You know, and I think that... I don't know that we... are more afraid to be vulnerable now. Mm-hmm. There's just, life is busy and there's so much going on and there's so much social media and so much internet and so much technology and, you know, but the simple things in life, you know.
Yeah, I loved writing letters. I had like a little writing desk that you had to fold down to make into the desk, and I had all my, like, stationery and everything, like, in the little drawers and cubby holes. It just felt like a really nice process. Like, I loved the process of writing a letter and sitting down with my pen and paper and trying to, you know, thinking of what I should write first. Because you can't edit it. You can crumple it up and throw it in the trash and start over. But, you know, it's, you can't just delete it and... move sentences around, or I don't know, you put more thought into it, and there's, I don't know, you put more of yourself into the process, and I don't know, I love it. I always wanted a pen pal. I never had one.
I was a terrible pen pal. I always wanted to be a good pen pal, but then I would, like, you know, write half of a letter and get distracted, and people were like getting stickers from their pen pal, and I was like, oh shoot, I have to write to my pen pal. I'd say we could be pen pals, but I'd probably be bad at it. I'd send you one letter. You'd get one. But I think, too, I write letters, actually, when I'm working on a monologue or something mm-hmm. to somebody. And I do it as an acting exercise for my kids. Okay. Like, I have them... there is something to the act of actually sitting down and writing something.
Yeah.
Because we don't do that so much anymore. So it's really interesting. I don't know. Who... I feel like now we should ask a letter writing question. We weren't prepared for the assignment.
We didn't know this is where it was going to go, but I'm glad it did.
Yeah, I know. Sorry, we have lots to say. We're just going to talk about season one, so we say, then we always segue to something else.
Oh, yeah, which is fine, it's okay to do that.
It felt necessary. Just like Dr. Turner's letters to Sheila.
Yes. Oh, my gosh. That's what she said. Just open the letter,
you
Sheila.
You said what's necessary. That's what she said.
Yeah.
I think I'm glad she waited. Somebody, I don't know if I read this somewhere or saw a video, but... she waited to make the decision on her own before she knew what the letter said.
She did it in her own time, which was good. But, like, I'm such an impatient person. You know? Like, I was like... I'm the person that, like, orders the thing and, like, sits by the door and... like, where's my thing? Like, if I got a letter from a man I was in love with or had a crush on or liked, I couldn't just let it sit there. Like, I'm so impatient. I couldn't dwell on it. I wouldn't be able to.
Well, what do you think? She was afraid that he was gonna say that he loved her, or he wasn't gonna say that, or both.
I wasn't even thinking that. I thought it was more of like a her thing. Like, is she ready emotionally to be on that level? Because she was still deciding whether she wanted to be a nun or not be a nun at that point.
So, well, I think that, you know, you make a commitment like that, mm-hmm. and you want to be certain.
Yeah.
And that's what they actually said to each other. I couldn't be more certain.
Yeah.
I know you so little, but I couldn't be more certain. And he said, I'm completely certain, or something like that. And they're beautiful accents, you know, mm-hmm. And I think that, I wonder what would have happened if, you know, she never opened the letters, you know?
Yeah, well, I do wonder that, too. I'm sure they would have had some sort of conversation, though, because they work so closely together. They wouldn't ignore each other.
Well, my friend said that she thought that Dr. Turner, you know, he's this handsome man and a kind person with a son, and there's all this talk about, you know, him kind of like almost like needing someone to help around the house, mm-hmm. or whatever, because it's not even, it didn't even seem like he was getting any other help. It was just the two of them, you know.
Oh, that scene always pops up in my mind when she sews the button on his jacket, because there was no one else to do it for him and he was too busy.
And they're talking about him at dinner, and she says, be more respectful of the doctor. Mm-hmm. Or doctor, because they never say the. They say baby doctor, right?
Yeah.
Do you know what I'm talking about? I had a thought and it went away. What were we saying? Bring it back for me.
We're talking about how he didn't have a lot of help around the house.
Oh, yeah. My friend started watching the show because, of course, like, I'm obsessed and I keep telling people to watch the show. And she's like, he's going to end up with one of those midwives, huh? And I'm like, the midwife, but maybe not who you think.
Yeah.
A midwife, but maybe not who you think. And I think we even talked about there being, like, a Sound of Music type storyline. Mm-hmm. And she still, like, it still didn't register. So I was like, just keep watching.
Yep.
I don't want to wreck it. Just keep watching. But yeah, that's interesting. It's also interesting. Well, I'm glad she chose love.
Yes, me too. It was definitely the right choice for her. Like, maybe being a nun was the right choice for her in that moment when she decided to be a nun, but it's also okay to change your mind and want to move on and change something about your life.
Yeah, and I do think that we're faced with that. Like, you know, you have people in your life who treat you the same as you were 20 years ago. Mm-hmm. And hopefully you evolve as a person. And things do change. And you're allowed to change your opinions and your mind based on your experiences. And I do think maybe being a nun was the right decision when she was younger. Mm-hmm. But I think that she had questioned it for a long time. And I think that feeling safe was something important to her. Yeah. And I think that he made her feel safe. And I think that that's part of what informed that decision as well. And I think, too, if she hadn't gone to nurses training at the London and gone to Nanata's house, would their paths have ever crossed?
Yeah.
Would they have ever been in this situation where, you know, and the timing just kind of, it's almost as if, you know, we talk about her glasses, as if like her eyes were shut for a while.
Right.
He was married. They didn't really, they were just colleagues. And then all of a sudden the chain of events of her you know, helping Timothy through certain things and caring about Timothy and worrying about the two of them. It was almost like she changed her glasses and her eyes opened.
Right. I think she changed her glasses around world. That time period when she was changing her mind on things and learning.
It was around the episode, the sewn button.
Okay.
Where the NHS, she got them through the NHS, which was one of the cut scenes that I found. But yeah, she changed her glasses around season two.
Yeah, that makes sense then. Like, it goes with her character. Like, she made that change, but she's going to be making more changes. Like, that's her first change.
Her eyes are open in a different
way. I like that. I like that way of thinking about it.
Well, sometimes we go through life with our eyes closed because we're afraid of something, you know. And Cynthia talked about being afraid of life. And I think that in some ways, Sister Bernadette is a lot like both Jane and Cynthia, where, you know, has a sense, a level of fear as well. But she's also, you know, strong in what she knows and confident. But that might have grown with time as well. Mm-hmm. You know, she was with all these nuns that were a little bit older, and they expected a lot of her. And they, you know, Sister Evangelina, I mean, as we talk about how she's tough love.
Yeah.
Tough love. I don't know. We could go on talking hours, guys. I feel like we need to wrap it up.
Yeah, it's been an hour and a half. And I'm going off battery power, so I should probably wrap it up.
Well, I hope that, like, y'all stuck around. Maybe you had a long trip and you needed to...
Yeah. But we want to know your thoughts. So I want to know what you feel about, you know, anything we talked about in this episode. So hit us up on our social media accounts. Or write us a letter. We don't have a P.O. box. But maybe one day.
Oh, we should get one. Get your letters ready.
I was just going to give them the social media accounts, but you go first.
Well, I was just going to say, maybe if you've ever written a letter, like, to someone, and was there ever a special experience that you had with, like, letter writing? That would be something interesting for people to share.
Yeah, I would love to hear that.
Sorry. Your turn.
No, I was just going to give the social media accounts. It's the same for Twitter and Instagram, which is... What is it? My brain just went blank. I was thinking it was like T_midwifery, but I'm like, that's not right. So yes. So our social media accounts is midwifery_T at both Twitter and Instagram.
It's at, right? Do we have to say at? We're doing good.
I think people know by now.
Call Dr. Turner.
I think at this point people know you gotta put the little at symbol. Or no, you don't have to when you're looking up things, when you're looking up accounts. I don't think you need to put that symbol. No. But if you want to tag us in something.
Oh, yeah.
Then you have to put the little at symbol. So if you want
to
tag us.
We need to come up with a hashtag for.
Yeah, we should. Hashtag. We should do a hashtag. We'll think of something and then come back with it next week.
Yeah, or weigh in on that, too.
Yeah.
What should our hashtag be?
Yeah. All right. Don't know how to wrap this up. Well, we'll see you guys next time.
We're having fun. Hope you guys had fun with us
and
enjoyed everybody's tea. Our hot drinks are now cold.
Yep.
Go heat up your drinks. And what do they have? Horlicks? I think that's like a hot cocoa.
Oh, okay.
Hot cocoa.
Sounds delicious.
On the show, right? They said we have some Horlicks.
Possibly. I don't know. I'll take your word for it.
My word might not be right. I might just be making it up. I don't think so, though. All right.
We're doing good.
We're doing great. Add it to the blooper reel.
Yeah. All right. So we'll catch you guys next time. Bye.
Thank you, guys. Have a great day.
We often seek the past in our present. And sometimes the past even seeks us. It is often said that history repeats. And if lessons aren't learned, it continues. However, retrospect is not something easily acquired in a present moment. Nor is it always something grand that helps to give clarity or a new sense of understanding. Perhaps just a slight change or simple word may help us to see life and its many moments from a different perspective.
Thank you for listening to the Tea and Midwifery, a Call the Midwife podcast. We are so grateful for your support and look forward to you tuning in to our next episode. We also hope that you'll enjoy our bonus series, Till Next Time, Sister Bernadette, The Sheila Diaries, which will be our take on the innermost thoughts of Sheila Turner. Thanks again for sharing a spot of tea with us, and have a great day.